Good morning, good afternoon, wherever you happen to be. Welcome to our presentation for today. My name is Steve Yoss. It's a pleasure to be with you and to present this course, Integration and Data Sharing for Accountants, Part 1. So welcome, welcome, welcome. Thank you for taking time out of your busy lives and busy days for being with us here. We've got an action-packed course in two parts for you, today being the first part, and we'll have the second part here in a couple of weeks. Looking at a variety of different tools and techniques to better assist with respect to sharing data inside your organization when in its different systems. In the first part of today's course, what we're going to go ahead and look at is kind of the building blocks and the foundational pieces of this, the stuff that you really kind of need to know to make your integration project really pop and really snap. And we're going to be specifically looking at what is integration, what should be integrated, and what are some of the different things that we should potentially look for in a solution. And so inside of this particular section, we're going to try to understand the big picture of what an integration project inside of a organization and company might look like, and some of the different components and some of the things that we should be looking for in terms of what type of systems, what type of data, and what to be on the lookout for and preventative issues that might occur. We're also going to be looking in the second half of today's presentation, how these different systems interact with each other and how they connect. And really, at the end of the day, all type of system integration comes back to a database. And it'll come back to this new term called API, or Application Programming Interface. And a database is where the data is stored. It answers the question of where. The API answers the question of how. So where do we store our data? Well, we store it into a database. How do we get our data in and out? We do that through an API. And so in the second half of our presentation today, we're going to go ahead and take a look at what relational databases are, the different tools and techniques with respect to getting our data in and out, and why this is important. Well, the answer is, if you know a little bit about this field, if you know just this amount of information about how a database works and how an API works, it is worth a pound of frustration as you get a little bit further into your projects. And so I'm going to try to give you an appreciation there and to be able to explore those topics in depth. Now, the bigger picture of this course is going to be looking at, and this will be our next session, some of the different desktop integration tools that are out there. We're going to take a look at, in our next section, tools such as Zapier, Power Automate, Ifit, Nodemation, and others, which can be incredibly helpful with respect to gathering data, pulling data, and pushing data to these other solutions that we might be able to use. We'll also take a look at some desktop tools, for example, Microsoft Power Query, which is a component of Microsoft Excel, and Power BI as well, in terms of tools that we can use to be able to consolidate data from different places and be able to have one consistent consolidated source of information inside of our company. We'll also take a look at custom programming, some different tools and techniques, and it's never been a better time to learn how to do a little bit of programming. And so what different techniques can we use to be able to push and pull data? And I'm also going to give you a listing of my favorite tools and service providers that I use to push and pull data from different places. So two-parter, our first part, we're going to lay some foundation. Second part, we're going to go ahead and build upon that foundation, and we'll look at a variety of tools that can make data sharing simple and easy. Quick word on who I am and why I'm with you here today. Again, my name is Steve Yoss. I am a certified public accountant, a CPA, as well as a software developer. About half my career is spent building systems for other people, building all types of systems and software and mobile apps and more. And about the other half of my career is spent helping other people learn how to do this. And so it's a pleasure being with you here today to combine my business and technology experience with you. And if you have any questions, by all means, feel free to reach out and ask. Now, I do want to point out for our financial professionals that are with us here today, this is a NASBA qualified webinar for CPE credit. So if you're interested in earning credit for today's class, go on and check us out at cpetoday.com. You can look for this course and complete a very short exam, about 5 questions. Takes you a couple of minutes and you'll earn a credit for watching today's podcast or listening to today's podcast now in the future. In addition to your purchase for the credits, you'll also receive a copy of today's presentation, any of the learning materials that are associated with it, and you can also ask me any questions that you might be interested in. So if you're interested, check out cpe.cx/IDS2, and you can go ahead and purchase today's course and receive credits for today's course. All righty, a couple of quick announcements and acknowledgments for our presentation for today. And without further ado, why don't we just go ahead and dive into our first of two parts for today's presentation. Our first part is going to be looking at integration. Our second part is going to be looking at databases and APIs and how they function. So in our first section today, I wanted really kind of set the groundwork and set the foundational level for what is integration and why is it important. We're going to talk about different examples of opportunity of integration for inside of your public accounting practice or inside of your business. We're going to talk about the different types of systems that are really prime candidates for integration, as well as some things that maybe should be avoided. And we're going to give you some ideas with respect to how we can get started with respect to our presentation and how we can get started with integration. You know, it's never been a better time to get started with these projects. So what is integration? Well, when we talk about integration, what we're talking about is easily being able to move information between systems without human intervention. Really, integration and automation go hand in hand with each other. With integration, we're talking about taking data from system A, and we talk about systematically, programmatically, automatically moving it from system A to system B, you know, it typically in an automated basis. That automated basis allows for information sharing with very little to none interaction at a human level. So when I set this stuff up, it continues to operate, continues to run without additional staffing requirements to kind of make that happen. Now, integration automation typically happens in one of two ways. It either happens on an events basis or on a scheduled basis. When we talk about an events basis, we have various things inside of our organization that will occur. And when they occur, that will kick off typically a routine, typically a workflow that will cause a whole series of other events and things to happen. And so that type of an event could be the issuing of an invoice, the creating of a customer, the setting up of a vendor, something of this nature. But one of these events occur, which can then trigger a whole set of other actions. And it could be taking that customer, taking that vendor information and setting it up in a whole bunch of other systems that we might be using. For example, we might be using QuickBooks Online as our accounting solution. Well, we also might be using something like HubSpot as our customer relationship management system. When a customer gets set up in one system, it can automatically set them up in the other. So from QuickBooks to HubSpot or vice versa. We also have things that are scheduled basis, something that happens once a day, once an hour, whatever the current needs of that might be. Well, with that particular schedule, we can go in, for example, look at all the invoices that have been created, all the customer accounts that have been updated, and then bulk batch process those to the other systems that might occur. In both of these circumstances, we're talking about moving data from one system to the other without staff having to be involved in that particular process and without having to manually do any of those particular actions. The systems, through programming, through automation design, will set these systems up to be able to exchange data with each other automatically. Now, every organization has different opportunities for integration depending on what the needs of the company are and the type of data that we're working with in the different systems that are in play. You know, and so I've got some examples here of some generic business requirements where integration would be a great candidate with respect to having systems talk within each other. Let's say, for example, you've got an accounting system, which pretty much every business would have. And let's say you've got salespeople, which again is something most organizations would have. Well, accounting people have accounting systems, salespeople have sales systems. That's pretty common. And generally, we want to not necessarily silo, but we want, depending on where you are in the organization, to focus on the system that you use most directly. So if it is a sales team, they're going to, for example, utilize a customer relationship management system on a day-to-day basis. And if they're an accounting team, they're typically going to use something like QuickBooks or Dynamics or something like that on a day-to-day basis. Well, ideally, we don't want the sales team in the accounting system because there could be confidential information like payroll or other things that we maybe don't want to run the risk of having people who work with that data on a regular basis interacting with, but they still need access to that. Well, we could set up an integration that when a customer record is created, or if the customer is updated or payroll is issued, so on and so forth, that data is automatically moved to another system. So we could, for example, set up that one system pushes an invoice in the accounting system over to the sales system so that the salespeople can see that new invoice has been issued and the current status of that invoice. We could have an inventory system. You know, let's say, for example, we have a website, we have our customers being able to purchase our information and purchase our products directly. Well, we could set up, for example, an integration between our inventory system and our website so that customers can see the current inventory levels and the status of a particular item so that they know when they buy something it's in stock, or, you know, if it's out of stock, what the expected wait time might be. You know, think about Amazon, for example, that has built a majority of its business around two-day shipping. Well, a lot of that comes from having amazing logistics as well as being transparent with the customer, because when you set that expectation, it'll be there in 2 days, that's when they want it to be there. You know, so having an API integration that allows these two systems to communicate in real time is a mission-critical operation for a company like that. Let's say you're working with other third parties. Let's say you're working with a logistics provider like FedEx, UPS, the United States Postal Service. Well, when somebody purchases something from your website, we could automatically push that information to some sort of fulfillment, some sort of operations. And as a component of that fulfillment process, maybe it generates the shipping label, the bill of lading, and other types of critical reports automatically, so that you don't have a customer or an employee, for example, having to weigh each individual item. You know, they pick the stuff that's important, put it in the box, the label is already generated, slapped on the box, and out the door it goes. Okay. Let's say we want to communicate information to staff, to employees, to vendors, whatever that might happen to be. Well, we could, for example, set up automatic notifications with respect to the status of those particular orders automatically using services such as Twilio, which we'll talk about in the second part of the course, where when those particular metrics occur, that happens and that those notifications are sent automatically and the customer feels engaged in this particular process. How about onboarding? You know, one of the most critical operations for any company is staffing, and having people come and go can be a lot of work depending on the size of your organization. Well, onboarding should be a pretty typical process in terms of getting the taxpayer information for payroll, setting them up in the systems to get like an email address or logins. Well, you could build a system, for example, that can do all the onboarding automatically. And this would be really beneficial if you are a high employee company, you know, where you're having people come and go on a regular basis. This is going to ensure that people are set up correctly, that their name is consistent across all company operations, the email is consistent across all company operations, and that the data is properly handled, you know, and something like that could really speed up bringing somebody into your company, which can translate to direct dollars saved to the bottom line. These are all examples of different operations that a company could do. You might do one, you might do 10, you might do none of these things, but the reality is your company is probably interacting with at least a half a dozen, if not more, systems on a regular basis. Why not improve the ability for the systems to be able to exchange information and just take humans out of the equation? So why is integration important and why is it useful? Well, for the most part, it's a requirement as your company grows and operates. If you expect to grow and operate, you need to have systems in place that can facilitate this. Otherwise, what you're going to see is that as revenue increases, cost increases at the same rate. You know, and that's not a really good position to be in any business. You want to be able to keep costs relatively flat and increase revenue without having to necessarily add a lot of variability in labor or in raw materials. You know, systems integration will, for the most part, be a fixed cost. And so therefore, it will save your organization long run, save a lot of money in the long run for that particular company, because it doesn't matter what the programming time is. It doesn't matter what the cost is for these different systems. As long as they're going to be used in the long term, they will always save your money, save your business money in the long term. Human labor is almost always the most expensive aspect of any business, whether you are a professional service firm, an accounting firm, or you are a restaurant. You know, your labor cost is something that's always going to be a major cost driver. Therefore, increasing integration, increasing automation will always save your business in the long run because it's usually a one-time cost. Or if there are some ongoing fees, they're typically significantly less than what you would see even the standard price of labor. Integration is excellent because it helps reduce errors. Integration automatically helps you reduce errors inside of your workflow because there's no human involvement. There's no clerical errors. There's no transposition errors. There's no accounting errors. Programming does exactly what you tell it to do, exactly the way you describe it 100% of the time. And so as long as you're programming for the automation of this and your logic is correct, the system will continuously do this every single time for you. So you're going to reduce errors, and errors can be very costly to the business. Integration helps in scalability and efficiency. Typically, if we look at computer operations, the amount of work to do one of something is the same as to do 1,000 or 1,000,000 of something. It's just a process that continuously repeats. And in certain instances, it might require additional computing resources like a bigger virtual machine or additional memory or processor time. But generally, those costs are minor and, again, relatively fixed per unit of output. So it's, again, very simple and easy. It doesn't require you to go out and hire additional people just to be able to serve that next client. So it allows you to be able to scale and gain efficiency in ways that would otherwise not be possible. Automation and integration is great from a standardization. As a component of this, you always have to build standardization into your procedures. You never want to automate, and I'll talk more about this here in the next slide, a process that is not very streamlined or very fragmented. So as you kind of build in integration and automation into your system, it's going to force you to come to that standardization position so that everything looks the same and operates the same, which is wonderful, again, for promoting scalability and promoting error reduction. Automation is great for security. There are things that people should never be involved in directly. If your customer has to call you to reset a password or to charge a credit card and you have to accept that information over the phone, that's not a secure process. Your customer doesn't want to do it, and it's so low value that you're wasting money in your business by having people have to do these things. Setting up integration and automation to allow for this data to be done automatically, like building up a credit card or a password reset, is what you're going to want to do straight away. And it's going to promote better overall security and reduce your risk for things like a data breach. Now, as great as integration is, it is not something that is a one-size-fits-all solution. It's going to vary depending on the organization. It's going to vary depending on the systems and the projects. And some things are candidates for integration and some things are not. Some exceptions to this that you might want to consider as you're starting to think through and plan your processes is things that are typically very manual and very complex. This is usually an indication of poor design more than anything else. But what this allows us to do is maybe to look at some of these processes that are typically poorly designed and that are highly manual and maybe come up with new ways that we can improve those particular processes in the long run. Okay. But if you've got things that typically can't be done by a computer, you know, for example, evaluating artwork or listening to audio, well, those aren't things that you're going to be able to integrate. Let's take Sotheby's or any other type of auction house. You know, you wouldn't have your computer evaluate artwork and give you a price. It might collect data for you, but ultimately a human is going to be much more suited to determining price, you know. However, you could still use automation in other components, maybe pushing this information to your website or making it available to other systems. But that one piece, maybe you're going to have a human do. Integration is not good when data is not standardized. If the format is not consistent, if the process is not consistent, don't bother with integration and automation. You know, it needs to look pretty much exactly the same way every single time for every unit. So if you've got data that's not standardized, this is an opportunity to go through, make those corrections, standardize that data so that when it's presented to the system knows how to handle it every single time. Frankly, some systems don't support integration. Every business has some sort of dark legacy system tucked into a closet somewhere in the back of the building, you know, that might have been around for the last 20 years. Well, I mean, sometimes that can be very difficult to work with. The good news is there's a lot of things that you can do. For example, as long as you can get access to the database, as long as you can get access to the root data, you can always build supporting programming to facilitate data automation and integration. But, you know, that could be quite difficult depending on the nature of the project that you're working with. Again, maybe a great opportunity to kind of look and finally get some of those old legacy systems out of place and get something modern that supports better integration and data sharing. What I will point out is there are a variety of standards that are out there. One standard is called ODBC, or Open Database Connectivity. ODBC is a ISO standard for interoperability of databases. It's been around since the early 90s. And the good news is, even if you've got an old legacy system, as long as it's not literally like reel to reel, you know, it's something that's within the last 30 years, you can use older standards to be able to pull and push information to it. One such standard being that ODBC. It just might be a little bit more difficult than a modern system that supports something like a REST API or a Graph API, which we'll talk about here in a little bit. You don't want to integrate something where the requirements are not absolutely nailed down. With a lot of the clients that I've worked with and projects that I've worked on over the years, they want to jump the gun and go straight to, you know, the mobile app, straight to the enterprise solution, straight to the integration and sharing between systems. You know, they haven't taken the time, for example, to think about their business processes and to make the appropriate adjustments and changes. The reality is, if you don't nail down your project requirements and you don't nail down the exact formats and systems, you're just going to be doing the work two or three times that is out there. So for that particular solution, you want to nail down the requirements ahead of time so that the solution that you choose to go with is essentially standardized and it works really, really well. You know, in that particular instance, what's great about that is that when you actually go to do the integration component of this, you're ready to go. It's locked and loaded, and you're only going to do that work once. The last thing that you might want to consider would be some of the costs. You know, as I mentioned before, with respect to the costs, the good news is that it's relatively fixed and usually one time. However, depending on the nature of your organization, if you have, for example, if you prefer, for example, operating costs over capital expenditures, things of this nature, you might want to consider some of these solutions and what that cost could be, you know, and depending on the nature of your accounting, you know, this might be cost prohibitive or against some of your generalized accounting practices for it. So something to consider with respect to what you're doing. Okay. Now, what are some of the features with respect to good integration? You know, if we're going to do this, what could this look like that could make your organization, your integration project really snap and really kind of add amazing value to the organization? Okay, well, I would tell you that as you start to think through the integration side of this, scalability is one of the major things. You know, as your organization is growing, as it's expanding, scalability is going to be key. And with respect to that kind of scalability, you need to know, am I building something for a dozen, a thousand, a million, a billion, potentially, of whatever process I'm tending to do? You know, a good integration solution will grow with this and with minimal effort be able to scale with the organization as needed. Now, with your integration process, you should be thinking about traceability. As you start to look at moving data from one system to the other, can you trace a transaction from start to finish? And if there's an issue, if there's a problem, can you see where the data is going and how it looks like and functions? So if there's an error or problem, you can correct it and continue that data push along its way. What happens if a failure occurs? Okay, with respect to the failure, what we want to think about would be, in the event that a system is not working and not functioning to what our expectations are, can we be able to recover from that particular failure and be able to move on with our data flow? You know, and so if the internet goes out, if the network drops, if a database becomes corrupted or some other thing like that, can we recover from that position to ensure that our systems are continuing to operate and continuing to function? And in the event that that data is has some sort of interruption, can we be able to recover from that particular data and be able to function accordingly? Can we build enough flexibility into our systems, both in the context of system upgrades as well as process changes, that allows this to be able to change effectively? So, for example, can we be able to change our systems? You know, swap out, for example, QuickBooks for Dynamics 365. Can we swap out, let's say, HubSpot for Suite CRM or something like that, but not have to redesign the whole process and system? You know, is there enough flexibility to support changing of this without having to redesign the whole house? Ideally, when your processes change, you want to be able to change the systems without having to rip everything down to the studs. Every single time. You also want to build enough flexibility so that you can attract new opportunities and new business processes and take advantage of new opportunities inside your organization very quickly and very easily. So with respect to this, it would be, for example, looking at and when new opportunities pop up, new things potentially change or function, can we be able to take advantage of that in a very easy timeline without having to, again, kind of make massive changes to the organization overall. Okay, so it's a careful balance, but it's a balance I think most organizations can face and that we can figure out. Now, what should we be looking for with respect to integration? What kind of things are candidates for integration? Well, I would tell you, for example, tasks that are repetitive are probably your best first step. Stuff that you do a lot of. Don't think about the stuff you do once a year or very occasionally as needed, but think about the things you do several times a day, several times a week. The stuff that is simple is also a really good example of this as well. So I would tell you, for example, to make adjustments to your business so that you can automate the low-hanging fruit. Make those changes and adjustments to make those systems available and easy to use so that you can essentially push out this information as needed. So stuff that is frankly quite simple, like creating of a customer account, pushing of an invoice, things like this, those low-hanging fruit objects are great because they typically tie up staff in a number of ways. You know, and so by kind of getting it pushed out there, you are simplifying your routines and processes. I would tell you that you should pick stuff that's timely. Pick tasks that need to be done on a schedule where timeliness is important. This would be, for example, things like, you know, that needs to be done in relatively real time, like a password reset or pushing of an invoice. You know, when customers request that, they want to be able to get that data as quickly as possible. And so by automating it, you alleviate that customer concern and everybody is just generally a little bit happier. I would tell you to pick the stuff that is typically prone to error. Tasks that are prone to clerical or human error, those are great opportunities for automation because you're going to reduce that risk and having to clean something up after the fact. I would tell you to pick the things that are generally security related. Anything that involves sensitive information is something that you might want to consider with respect to pushing out of the data. That's going to make things faster, easier, and better. I would tell you, for example, also to pick stuff that is stored in a system. You know, generally for integration to really kind of work effectively, I would tell you that stuff has to be inside of a database. So stuff that is stored inside of a database is really going to kind of be a requirement for this to work effectively. You know, if it's something stored on a physical piece of paper, I can't automate that because I can't get access to it in a way that is meaningful to my company. So that I would tell you that things that are stored inside of a system are going to be what you're going to want to consider. And if it's not in a system, it's a great time to consider how that might be with respect to getting that data inside of a system. Okay, now the next question a lot of organizations have is, what can be integrated? Where is our data? How do we actually get from one place to the other? Well, what I would tell you is you need to kind of do a survey of the different systems inside your company and the different things that you're utilizing. You should consider, for example, your accounting system, your marketing system, your operations system, things of this nature. You know, and you should look at those different systems and you should document the different processes that are popping up here. You know, creating an account in 1, 2, 3, 4 systems. What does that look like? And, you know, what would it look like to have a master system and have that master system essentially do that work for you in the other solutions that are out there. So you might want to take a survey of the executive level systems, the managerial level systems, and then the stuff your actual users are interacting with and your actual field staff is working with. Most companies are utilizing, I'd say, at least a half a dozen, and sometimes a lot more than that, depending on the nature of the work that they are doing. And remember, why are you doing this? Integration is going to save you time. It's going to reduce your resource requirements. It's going to reduce errors. It's going to promote effectiveness inside the company. And it's going to be an overall better way of achieving. It's going to get you to that point of scalability, cost reductions, so that you can really kind of focus on the parts of the business that really make sense. Now, how do we get started with this? And what are some of the main things that we should be considering? Well, lots of different tools that are out there, and there's stuff from the novice to the expert, from the neophyte to the computer programmer with a PhD in computer science. And depending on where you are in that spectrum, there's a tool and service for you. Now, there are three ways that I see you promoting integration inside your business. I would tell you there are a variety of what we call low-code, no-code solutions for building integration. So, for example, there are services such as If This Then That, Zapier, and Power Automate, which in our next section, or not in our next section, but in our next class, we're going to go ahead and take a look at, and I'm going to give you a walkthrough of how those different solutions work. There's a variety of desktop tools you already have access to, Excel, Power BI, Access, and more, that are fantastic from a data reporting perspective in terms of being able to consolidate data, bring it all in one shop and be able to learn from that particular data. And for the power users among you, sky's the limit. You know, programming is something that's truly incredible, that you can build anything from anything and build kind of any solution that you might need. And it's never been a better time to learn programming from JavaScript, Python, C Sharp, and others. There's languages at every level of understanding and at every level of competency. And it's easier and better than ever before because the languages have improved and the training has improved, and it's a great time to get started. Okay, let's go ahead and have our first review question for the day. And so here is our question. What types of data would be prime and great candidates for systems integration? Would it be information from your accounting and inventory system? How about paper-based reports from your office? Real-time data from your ERP solution? Entries from your time management or payroll solution? What would we want to consider maybe integration, and what would be good candidates for data sharing? Well, in my opinion, I would say probably these three: information from our accounting and inventory systems, information from our ERP solution, information about payroll. Why? Because they're system generated, they're typically stored into a database, and there's already going to be services that allow us to be able to push and pull data from there. Unfortunately, our paper-based reports, those aren't really opportunities for integration because we can't get access to that data simply and easily. All righty. So let's go ahead and go into our second section for today and our second topic that we are going to go ahead and discuss. And so our next section is going to be databases and APIs. What are they and how they function? I also want to remind you that this podcast is eligible for CPE credit. If you're interested in earning credit for today's class, go ahead and check out the URL above here, cpe.cx/IDS2. Take a quick 5-question exam. Go ahead and earn your CPE credits to keep and maintain your license. In addition to your purchase, you also get copies of the learning materials as well as copies of today's presentation for your viewing pleasure. So, let's go ahead and get back to our class here, and let's look at the second section, which again is going to be databases and APIs. Now, in this section, we're going to go ahead and talk about what is a relational database. We're going to talk about the main functions and what they are and how they operate. We'll talk about some of the main concepts that I think are really useful with respect to understanding how a database functions, the keys and the relationships and what they are. We'll talk about the different ways that we can interact with the database. We'll be looking at, for example, SQL, which is structured query language, is the language of databases. We're going to talk about REST APIs, which is a way of being able to push and pull information very easily, and webhooks as well. And we're going to talk about specifically for those APIs, these application programming interfaces, what they are and how they really kind of facilitate any type of integration and sharing project. Now, why is this important? Why does this matter? Well, frankly, you need to know this. And if you're just here to kind of get a general sense of kind of what and possibilities are out there, having just a little bit of knowledge of databases can be really useful and effective for understanding how your project is going to come together. I could tell you that out of all the knowledge I probably use on a regular basis the most, my knowledge about databases and having good, functional, capable knowledge of getting data in, getting data out of a database is probably the knowledge I use more than just about anything. And it's the knowledge that I use on a day-to-day basis probably most. When I'm often asked by accountants, you know, hey, Steve, what's the next thing I should be learning, you know, in my career? My answer is always the same. If you don't know how to use a database, you really should learn how to use a database. It's so incredibly empowering being able to write your own reports, extract your own information, update your own records. And if you think about accounting, at the end of the day, for the most part, it's all systems now. I mean, we're not really doing that much physical paperwork anymore. And we're not even really doing that much like inventory accounting, you know, maybe the audit here or there, but really an accountant is somebody who's an expert in information, and a database is how we store information in a way that makes sense. So I'm telling you this, we're going to go through this section because just a tiny pinch of knowledge in this field, if you're not familiar with it, will save you so much time and effort in the long run. Now, almost all integration projects will involve at least one, if not multiple, databases inside your organization. It was going to utilize this because that's how we get data in and out. And so what we're going to want to know here are probably three main concepts: keys, relationships, and normalization. Those are the kind of the main things that I would tell you that we would want to consider with respect to our integration sharing project. And the reason we want to know these things is because if we can structure those three things correct, the actual pushing and pulling of data is quite simple. So first off, what is a database if you've never worked with one before? You know, and to be fair, we all work with databases every time. It's just usually we're consuming the data. Now we're talking about creating databases and working with them directly. So a database, or more formally a relational database, is a collection of information in a structured format. For those of you who have experience with spreadsheets, for example, well, what is an Excel workbook? An Excel workbook is a collection of spreadsheets. What is a spreadsheet? Well, it's a collection of rows and columns. What are rows and columns? It's a collection of cells. So that's the smallest unit of any kind of data set. And databases are the exact same thing. A database is a collection of tables. A table is a collection of rows and columns. Rows and columns are a collection of individual cells. And so with this, what we can utilize is the same methodology that we use with spreadsheets, but in the context of a database. A database is typically more rigid. It's got more structure in it than what we would expect with a spreadsheet. When we make modifications or changes to a database, we're doing it across the entire data set, you know, a whole column of data. We're very rarely are we interacting with just one little tiny bit of it, but rather there's more system and more high level changes versus in a spreadsheet. Now, in a database, like in a properly formatted workbook, a row represents a single record. A column is an attribute of that particular record. So if we were looking at a database going down, okay, each row would represent record one, record two, record three, record four, and a column would describe that. So a column would be like first name. Column B would be, for example, last name, and so on and so forth. Inside of a database, a table will typically represent a single relation, a single thing. So we would, for example, store orders, and all order information would be in that one table. So if I wanted to find the date, the order ID, the shipping ID, something of that nature, it would be stored in that. We would not, for example, find payroll data in an order table, you know, because we want to store things in their smallest unit, and typically the smallest unit would be single purpose. Now, tables are designed to work with other tables. They're relational by their very design. And so we have this concept of keys. And keys are attributes that form a relationship between multiple tables. So a key would be something like order ID, customer ID, social security number. It represents a single thing inside of a larger set that with that ID, I can find anything I might want to find out about that particular record from that ID. And keys allow us to be able to form a relationship. So if we're looking at, and I'll give you an example here in a minute, customers and orders, well, with an order ID, I can go and look up what customer it applies to. Or if I'm on the order table and I can see the customer ID listed there, well, knowing a customer ID, I can see all the orders that that person had purchased. And it's a very standardized way of being able to push and pull information from one place to the other. You know, if we think about some of the general purposes of accounting, one of the main qualities is comparability, you know, being able to take one set of records and compare them against another set, company A against company B, and get a sense of financial outcome. Well, if you know databases, you can have a database one and database two, and you have a rough idea of how they would relate with each other, or how you would work with one or the other. The knowledge, once you have it, is universal. Okay. Databases can store anything, you know, from a simple record set like orders and transactions to multimedia and really kind of everything in between. Now, the three main components that I think as a financial professional you really need to know are keys, relationships, and normalization. So keys are the unique record locator for something, and they allow you to find something specific. And keys live all around us. Order ID, customer ID, member ID, event ID, things of this nature. A check number is an example of a key. You know, so if I have a check number, well, I could then go look up the memo, the amount, who it was paid to, the date, okay? And then potentially even general ledger transactions that go along with it. So understanding what keys are going to be essential for your integration project, because typically you're pushing over a key. And with that key, then you can go look up something else about that. And it's more efficient because we don't have to send over the entire record. We can just send one tiny little bit of data. Now, the next piece of this is relationships. Okay. With relationships, this is how we see the bigger picture. So if we have a customer table and an order table, we know how they fit together because they have a common attribute, a primary key in one table and a foreign key in another. It would be something like an order ID or a customer ID or product ID that would allow those two things or three things or four things to be combined. Now, the process of tying both these things together, taking the keys, getting data, and bringing it together to make it useful is the process of normalization. It's the process of translating data from one way, which is the way databases want to store data, to a more human-friendly format. And when we talk about moving data from one system to the other, normalization is a big component of this because we want to be able to understand and see this data in a format that makes sense to us. So if you can understand these three main concepts, the rest of working with databases will just make sense. But if you can get over this hill, you're going to be good to go. Okay. I usually tell people, you know, if you have at least working knowledge of spreadsheets, you can learn to utilize a database in about a week. You know, I would say about 30 to 40 hours, you're going to be good to go in terms of being able to probably do anything you might need to do as a financial professional. Pulling and reporting data would be quite simple. Now, there might be things down the road you're going to want to learn and function, but working knowledge, I would say, is about a week of time. So in my opinion, again, this is like something everybody should learn how to do because it adds so much value for such a little time investment. Now, as you're working with databases, you should be mindful of the keys. As you're designing your integration projects, you should be mindful about how these different pieces come together. And setting up good practices with your keys are going to be really helpful because it's going to ensure that 5 years down the road, you've still got an integration solution that's going to make sense and work. Okay. And screwing up the database will cause a lot of headache and problems down the road. It's so easy to get off track that we want to avoid any potential issues before they occur. So as you're designing your integration solution, what I would tell you is first and foremost, you should pick what we call a master database of record or a system of record. It is the system that essentially is the most primary, the most important system inside your organization. All other systems will be ancillary and subsidiary to this and will push and pull information from this particular system. So the schema, you know, which is the design of the database, like the customer ID, the order ID, so on and so forth, should all kind of flow from that one system so that when you're looking at things, they all tie back to that one system. And that's the primary system that you're going to choose to use. And the system will vary depending on the nature of the business of what you're working with. So it could be your accounting system in one company, and it could be your ordering system in another company. Okay. you want to standardize your keys so that you, for example, have the same customer ID throughout all the different systems that you're utilizing. You know, you don't want to have, for example, one system have one customer ID and another system have a different customer ID. That would be very confusing for people. Generally, I would tell you use numbers. If possible, use numbers. Avoid letters. Integers, whole numbers are so much simpler and easier than anything else. Be consistent. Don't pick keys that are going to change. Something like an email address would be not a good key because that can change from time to time. Likewise with last name. And keep it simple. The simpler, the better. And the more simple it is, the easier it will work and the faster it will be adopted inside your organization. All right, let's have our second review question here. Which of the following is a design recommendation for your database keys? Okay, use complex keys, make them as long and complicated as possible. Avoid keys which could change, for example, email addresses or last name. Use different keys for all your systems. Make sure they're all different. Use letters. Numbers are slower for computers to process. Okay, well, which is the true one here? It is our second choice here. Avoid keys which can change. Don't use email. Don't use last names. Just, you can use those as a component of the record, but it's always generally best to utilize a separate standard key that will be permanent. Now, what does the database look like? How does this function? Database can be a standalone thing. It can be integrated into something else. There's a variety of technology that's out there, for example, from Microsoft SQL to MS SQL, so on and so forth, which are standalone databases. But there's also kind of application databases as well. QuickBooks is a good example of this. With QuickBooks, the database and the application are really kind of one thing, okay? So, almost in every capacity, something that you're utilizing is going to be using a database. So it just sometimes will be discrete or sometimes it'll be integrated depending on the nature of what you're working with. Here's an example of a database for orders and customers. On the left-hand side here, we see a listing of our customers. On the right, we see our orders. And you'll notice that there are some common fields like client ID and order ID present here. You know, if I wanted to go to the order table and figure out what client bought something, well, as long as the client ID is present there, let's take client ID 10045. Well, then I can take that 10045, go to our customer table, and I can look that up, and it will return back data. So 10045 would be Marge Penner, and from there I can pick her first name, her last name, or a zip code. But in practice, you're never going to see, for example, the first name, last name, and zip code in the order table. Why? That's not relevant to the order. You know, it would be in the customer table. And if we wanted to find that data, we would go look it up in that customer table using that order ID. And this is a much more efficient way than having to replicate our names and our addresses across every single table, which they might appear. This would cause issues, for example, with updates in the future. And it's just generally not recommended because it's not a really efficient way to repeat yourself. And databases, we have what's called the single responsibility principle, meaning we generally want to have one thing be responsible for one thing at any given time and never two things or three things. And not repeating yourself is a main component of that. So when should you use a database? Generally, I would tell you use a database as much as possible, from simple records to complex data sets. They're really kind of useful for pretty much any type of project. They're great for storing a large quantity of diverse data. They're great when you got a lot of users interacting with lots of data in real time, concurrency, multi-user. Those are all things that we would want to consider with respect to our data sets. They're great when we have mixed use cases. For example, I want to use a reporting system, a website, a mobile app. I want to share data from system A to system B. Nothing better than a database for supporting that interaction. It's great when we want to use a variety of different technologies too, you know, from web to desktop, so on and so forth. Databases really shine. They're also great with respect to security. There's probably nothing better with respect to ensuring security for our data than keeping it in a database where we can, for example, store access information and update information. We can track when a user interacts with something and who that user was, maybe where they came from, and we can do that audit log automatically. As great as the database is, it's not perfect for every single potential use case. There are instances where it is not, which we'll talk about here in a moment. But the good news is that there are a lot of really good use cases for it. And the use cases of utilizing a database, in my opinion, far exceed the use cases for not utilizing a database. Now, there are a variety of really good solutions that are out there. I've got a couple listed here, and we want to pick a database that's generally designed for whatever particular task that we're working with. And we have SQL-based databases. We also have this concept of NoSQL databases, just depending on what we're working with. But here, for a traditional accounting and business implementation, we're going to be using tried and true standard SQL databases. You have MS Access, which is a standard personal database. It's been around for a very long time, great for small projects. Generally, that's about it. In terms of kind of our standard bigger solutions, we've got MySQL, MSSQL, Oracle, in order of size. Generally, I personally recommend MySQL and MSSQL. Those tend to be the solutions that I go to the most. My preference would be with MySQL. It's a great all-around database. It's also free. It's open source, great functionality, and you can do a lot of really cool stuff with it. If you tend to focus more on Microsoft solutions, MSSQL is also a really good solution as well. But you could pick, whether you want a cloud database or an application-based database or a desktop server database, lots of solutions that are out there for you to consider. Okay, a couple of additional slides here. We also have transactional and analytic databases, for depending on the needs of our project, whether we need to deal with real-time data as it's coming in, that would be our transactional database. We can also design what's called an analytical database or an analytics database. Great when we want to consolidate information from multiple sources into one place. And just depending on the needs of our project, we might use one or both. Okay. Now, with respect to our databases, very similar to some of the requirements for our integration, we've got some specific things that we're looking for when we're working with our databases to provide a good experience. We call it the ACID test. Okay. Anonymity, consistency, isolation, durability. Ideally, we want to, for example, have our data be very safe and secure in that database. And this ACID test ensures that as we're making data changes, pushing data changes, updating data, that is being done in a correct way. Okay. So atomicity refers to all or nothing. Okay. When we make an update to a transaction, we want to make sure that the entire transaction is there, that we don't update a partial record. So when we design a database, we want to ensure that it is done correctly. We're looking for consistency, so that if any transaction that we push, if it has an error inside of it, will not invalidate another transaction in the system. We're looking for isolation, okay? We want to be able to have multiple people working with the database concurrently so that if transactions are being done, multiple people can be able to interact with it, and we can do this in such a way that is safe and secure. We're also looking for durability so that once a transaction's been committed, it's going to stay inside of that database in the event of even a power or network issue or an error, that the data, once it's committed to the database, is going to remain correct. Okay, we have different styles and deployments for our databases. We typically have local and cloud. Those are going to be our two primary options. If it's a local database, it's going to be something that's inside of our network, inside of either our computer or in our own company's data center. But increasingly, we're choosing to utilize cloud-based database providers. For example, Amazon Web Services, Microsoft Azure, Google, all are wonderful options with respect to cloud solutions. Generally, if you're going to be using it just for yourself, you would utilize a local database. But if you're going to be creating something that's going to be interacting with multiple other offices, multiple other companies, well, utilizing cloud-based resources is a no-brainer in this instance, because that's really kind of what it's designed for. Now, the way we interact with databases is going to be quite standardized. Okay. It's called SQL, Structured Query Language. Okay, it's a programming language, but the good news is it's really easy to learn, really easy to understand, and it is 100% optimized around dealing with data. So SQL is going to be the language that you utilize to pull data in and out. So if we wanted to select data or get data, we use something like select star from customers, which would go and get all customer data and return it for us to use. Or if we wanted to update something, likewise, we would use a similar command. I would tell you, out of all the database stuff that you should learn, having functional knowledge of how SQL operates, how structured query language operates, is going to be a really good foundational piece of this. Now, what you need to know with respect to SQL are the following. First and foremost, it's a formal language. Everything is very structured. It's literal. Syntax, grammar, spelling, capitalization all matter. You know, so in the sense of what you're doing here, make sure that it's designed correctly and what you're asking the right question. Order matters. SQL databases typically operate from first to last. So asking the question in the correct order is going to be really important to get a reliable answer back. And there are no undo and delete with databases. You tell it to delete something, that data is essentially gone in almost all circumstances. All right. In the last section of our class today, I do want to spend a few minutes talking about how we get data in and out of our databases and how most of these functional integration solutions work. Well, they work off the concept of an API or application programming interface. An API is like a doorway for your business. It's how you pull data in and out. And REST, which is representational state transfer, is the standard way that we do databases and APIs now. It's super common and it's very easy and effective to use. What's great about it is that neither system, you know, let's say you get your payroll solution and your accounting solution or your vendor solution and your customer solution. Well, we could set it up so that they can exchange information with each other where neither system needs to have deep, intimate knowledge of the other to be able to exchange information. And so it provides wonderful and easy interoperability between these different systems to be able to communicate with each other. You don't need to know how to create a REST API as a financial professional, but what I will tell you is that as you're starting to look at different solutions for your organizations, a key question to ask your vendor is, does it have a REST API? Does it have webhooks? And if so, you know you're going to have a much easier time getting data in and out of that solution, and it'll be much easier to be able to push and pull data from that database to something else. Not having a REST API at this point, in my opinion, would invalidate most of the reasons to acquire a piece of technology. It is, in my opinion, one of the main things to consider because it's mostly important to pick solutions that allow for data to be coming in and out easily. You know, it's important that everything kind of fits together. Another type of API, we have what's called a webhook. Webhooks are essentially what we call a real-time API or a push API. They allow for real-time interaction. So something happens, go do something somewhere else. So that's another method of being able to push data to and from places. Again, you don't need to have to know how to create a webhook, but just knowing that this is an option and ensuring that whatever systems you choose in the future support this is going to be something that you should ask your vendors as you're making acquisitions of technology inside your organization. Now, the language of APIs in terms of pushing and pulling data, and you're going to use this if you start using solutions like Zapier and Power Automate, which we'll talk about in our next class. Well, that's JSON or JavaScript Object Notation. You know, previous languages include things like XML or SOAP, which were very difficult and hard to interpret. JSON's much simpler, much easier. And if you had to choose between any of the other languages like XML or SOAP, JSON's going to be the one that you want. And it's all very transparent and easy to work with. What's great about it is it's easy for the computer to process, but it's also available and easy for humans to be able to read and understand. So at the end of the day, what does this look like? Well, we have a client that's requesting something. That data goes through what we call CRUD operations, create, read, update, or delete. It makes those requests to services, and those services will communicate back and forth. And so when we talk about data sharing or integration, we're having one system through standard methods, through standard protocols, in a standard language, be able to go and communicate that information to a server and have those information pushed back and forth. And as we start to look at this, it could be a one-to-one, one system to another system, or it could be a whole chain of systems inside of an ecosystem of larger projects, products that all are communicating on behalf of the client. But it's a standard way of doing it. It's a efficient way of doing this. And it's also a way that we can be able to grow our systems very simply and easily. Let's have our last review question. We're going to go ahead and wrap up. Our last review question is, what is the main purpose of an API? What are the main benefits of using them in your systems? Okay. Allows for system-to-system integration with no human involvement. Allows for secure transfer of confidential information. Can be utilized to achieve specific workflow requirements. And the answer, of course, here is all of the above. What's great about an API is that you achieve all of this and more in utilizing them in your projects, and it's going to be the basis of how you build integration and automation inside your business. The database and the API are the building blocks of those solutions. Okay, let's go ahead and wrap up. What did we talk about today? Well, All organizations of all size are using different types of systems. There's benefit from an integration and automation perspective of having these systems communicate and talk better with each other. The backbone of any project is going to be the data, and quality data will make or break your project. Having good databases will make or break your project. The way we're going to get our data in and out and flow, you know, if data is in a plumbing system, data is the water. The way the water flows, the pipes of this are going to be our APIs, and they're our building blocks, really kind of any systems project. In our next time we come together for this particular class, which will come out in the next couple of weeks, we're going to look at web integration tools, tools such as Zapier, Power Automate, and others, the benefits of what these tools are and how they function. We're going to talk about different programming tools and other desktop and deployment tools that can really kind of make this faster and easier. And we're actually going to go hands-on with a couple of these solutions, and I'm going to share my screen and walk you through how they function. So stay with us. Lots of really good stuff coming up. If you have any questions about today's class, please go ahead and reach out. You can follow us on Twitter at CPE Today. You're welcome to send us an email, questions@cpetoday.com, as well as connect with us on LinkedIn. So if you have any questions about today's class, love to know what they are, please feel free to reach out and inquire. And also as a reminder for our financial professionals that are with us here today, if you are subject to continuing education, you can earn credits for watching today's podcast. Go ahead and go to cpetoday.com to learn more. Our specific course class is cpe.cx/IDS2. Take a quick 5-question exam, earn a credit for today's class. In addition to getting your exam, you'll also get copies of the presentation, and you can ask more intimate and detailed questions to me as well. Now, our next class will be next Tuesday. So Tuesday, January 19th, next week, we're going to go hands-on with QuickBooks Online, doing an introduction and overview. The first part of a 2-part class where we're going to look at some of the detailed stuff of QuickBooks Online, giving you a sense of what this application does and how it functions, a tour of the functionality. And on Friday, January 22nd, we're going to be taking a look at PPP and COVID-19 relief for 2021. Congress has recently allocated a variety of new programs to assist businesses through these troubled times. We're going to talk about what they are, how they function, and some different opportunities to account for this. And so whether you're a public practitioner, this is going to be the stuff you're going to need to know to answer your clients' questions, or if you're a business owner, some of the different opportunities of funding that you might be able to get your business through these times. I just want to say thank you so much for your time and attention today. It is always a pleasure being with you here. Stay with us. If you'd like today's presentation, please consider subscribing, liking our channel. Go ahead and leave us some comments. Consider following us on our social media. And I very much hope to see you in another presentation soon. Thank you. Best wishes. Good luck.